Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, NVIDIA RTX Super Ryzen 3600, early rumors on iPhone 11 and Pixel 4, low voltage equals low performance, Sebastian's lost keys, and aardvarks. All that more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twits, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 526, recorded on July 25th, 2019. NVIDIA RTX 2080 Super? Not really. Welcome to Twits, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twits weekly show that aims to bring you shock hardware news. We're going to be talking processors, phones, a little bit of mayhem with GPUs, and of course, the excitement of what happens when you're building a machine and everything goes wrong. I have nothing personal to add to that thought. I just, I'm sure some of you, that's Sebastian Peake, you hear beginning to preparing to mock me in the background as well. He should.
Hey, did you I tell know, you're about- rusty. It's been a long time, probably since you put together a computer and, you know, when you were building computers on a regular basis, they were probably a lot simpler and like, you know, to use a different socket, like slot A or something like that. So,
you know, what happened was I built a system. I'd been running it for a couple of years. It's great. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. I used a very inexpensive motherboard. And it died. And of course, everybody's like, it's the motherboard. And so a couple of weeks ago, I swap out the motherboard. I got like an upgraded, I had an AMD, first gen AMD Ryzen processor. I'm like, okay, so, you know, my beater rig, I'm going to put, you know, a fresh motherboard, a fresh processor in there that I had that I wasn't using for another project. It won't boot. It won't boot. I finally realized that the second 12-volt rail for the CPU is dead and that the power supply had died. And it had been so long since I had a power supply die, it never occurred to me to check when the machine died that it was a power supply issue, not anything else. So yeah. Now I have two complete systems.
That's the thing. That's a good point about power supplies, though, because I know you and I probably run the same one for a decade. Right. And then you just forget about it. Like, oh, it's just there. I just swap it from case to case, maybe every 5 years, and you know, you forget about it. But kind of a vital component, I guess.
Kind of a vital component. Well, it was also funny because like the motherboard was lighting up. It wasn't giving me any postcodes. It was just not getting enough voltage for the processor. And then, you know, I bought a new power supply, and like this one has modular cables, so my cable mess will be less messy. But I was laughing because, you know, I plugged it in to the old system and it ran perfectly, and I'm like, I plugged it in the new system and it ran perfectly, and I'm like, great, you know, I just did all of this work to rebuild a perfectly functional system, but now I have a lot more cores to throw at Blu-ray compression or video compression. There's a weird grab bag of stories today. You know, there's a whole bunch of phone news, a bunch of rumors that are coming out. We've got some interesting responses to import tariffs, or sort of, I would say, the new reality of import tariffs. But let's start out with the RTX 2080 Super, which you are calling a less super, which leads me to suspect that where the 2060 Super is a 2070, the 2070 Super is basically a 2080. The 2080 Super is just a tiny bit better than a 2080.
Yeah.
A tiny bit.
Okay. In fairness, and so far I had been testing the Founders Edition cards, and of note, NVIDIA is not charging any more for those with the Super card. So instead of the $100 premium for a Founders Edition, where the RTX 2080 was $799, now it's only $699, which is the same price as all the stock cards. But comparing those, the 2070 Super was about 10%-ish shy of a 2080. So we're like, oh, wow, what if the 2080 Super is like within 10% of a 2080 Ti, which is $1,000 plus graphics card. The Founders Edition of that card is $1,199. So it's like the $500 difference there is so great. Is it even possible? And maybe it's using the same GPU, because the GPU that's in the RTX 2070 Super and 2080 is the same. That's why they're so similar. And it's the TU-104. And that chip is also in the 2080 Super. So how much further could you go with TU-104 than you already were with the 2080? And it turns out there were a grand total of two streaming multiprocessors. I think that's what it's called. SMs, I'm forgetting. But that, that only raises your CUDA core count from 2944 to 3072. And it raises everything else up a little. No, it's not a lot. It raises everything up a little bit. Texture units are now 192 instead of 184. Same number of ROPs because it's 64 ROPs on that GPU. So then they increased clocks. So it's the highest stock clocks we've seen so far from Turing. So 1815 megahertz, which is way up from 1710 with the RTX 2080. So you're basically getting a 2080 with those that last little bit of the TU-104 unlocked, about 105 megahertz overclock, or you know, and much faster memory. They increased the memory speed to their fastest GDDR6 speed so far, which is 15.5 versus 14 gigabit per second, the data rate. So very fast memory, which makes the memory bandwidth almost 500 gigabytes a second.
Right.
TDP is up to 250 watts. So all these things, like, okay, it has more power handling capability. It's got the rest of the GPU completely unlocked, and they've bumped up the clocks. So all of this translates into, versus the 2080 Founders Edition, about 5%. 5%. Faster.
I'm not,
not within
really
5%
feeling
of the 2080 Ti, but just 5% faster. So.
So it really is super in name only.
Well, yeah. I mean, the I'm trying to justify like why this even has to exist. And I guess if you think of it as a price drop, because it could be thought of as simply a price drop, not because the 2080 was any more expensive than $699 for a stock card, but because the Founders Edition was $799. So now, instead of just saying, hey, we've lowered the price of the Founders Edition to $699 and you don't get anything more out there from board partners because they already have the same GPU, then I guess that's less compelling than if I said, hey, here's a 5 to 6% performance increase, because they were talking 6% over a stock, 5% over the Founders Edition, and I found that to be pretty much the case. So it's 5 or 6% faster, same price. And in the case of the Founders Edition, $100 less. So if you like the Founders Edition card, which it has a very nice cooler on it, it's very efficient, it's got Chrome on it now. But the, of course, as I knock my microphone over, they're nice coolers. They're quiet. It's just after the excitement of 2060 gets you a 2070 now if you get the Super, and then 2070 Super is almost all the way to a 2080, and then this is like 5% faster. So you can look through any of the reviews out there, including mine, and see about that increase. I did all my testing. I did it all over again, all on the newest drivers, and just doing 1440 Ultra, which pretty punishing in some of these games where we're only getting like the two cards out of a list in a single title might get 60 frames per second in some of these games like Metro Exodus or Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So they're tough tests of the GPU trying to eliminate CPU bottlenecks, but it's still not, it's fast enough to play 1440 Ultra by easily in most games, but you're not really gaming at 4K high settings with this card. If you are interested in 4K, you're still going to have to get a 2080 Ti, and it's still $500 more. So that's disappointing.
I mean, it's also, and this is kind of like, I'm looking at the World of Tanks benchmark just because it happened to be in front of me, you know, but you look at these numbers and it's, you know, the 2070 Super is running, you know, 6 or 7 frames behind, either practically the same, you know, within a couple frames or maybe a max of, 2 frames, 6 frames. The average frames per second is about 6 frames different. The RTX 2080, it's maybe, you know, 2 frames per second faster. The RTX 28 Super, Well, it's about 10 frames per second faster on average. So that's healthy. Yeah. But I don't think anybody's going to go from a 1080 Ti to an or an RTX 2080 to a 2080 Super. You know what I mean? Is buying a brand new card at that price point worth an extra 10 frames per second? Probably not for the vast majority of people, especially when you look at the Founders Edition, which has a significantly, or I should say the 2080 Ti Founders Edition, which has a much bigger delta.
And that's just one. I mean, it depends on the game. And the one really weird result was I finally added at least one Vulcan benchmark. And if you look at the World War Z results, that paints a very different picture of all these graphics cards. There's 12 cards in this group. And with World War Z using the Vulcan API, suddenly, even though the Ti is still on top, the Radeon 7 isn't too far behind. And then the RX 5700 XT is right behind it. And one of the things I discovered in this review was that the 5700 XT is really close to a Radeon 7 in a lot of instances where it just doesn't make sense to spend $700 on a Radeon 7 when you're getting that much for $400. And that, again, kind of questions the $700 2080 Super because, it's a little bit faster than the 2080, just a little bit. Still $700. And coming up on the heels of the $700 Radeon 7 is this really fast RX 5700 XT. So I don't know if NVIDIA did enough, or maybe this card will be coming down in price once the bigger Navi card comes out, because these $100 increments are nice, like $399 for very good performance, $499 for even better performance. What if this card was $599 and would just decimate Radeon 7, of course, price performance and overall performance, but then there's no reason for them to do that yet, I guess, is what I'm saying. Because Radeon 7 is still $700. And that's the only card outside of some Vulcan benchmarks that can even come close to this, and it's still not beating it in most like DX12 and DX11 benchmarks. So,
yeah. I mean, also, I hear the Vulcan numbers, and I think this is also a case where NVIDIA has, had a lot of money for a lot of years and has been working with a lot of developers to maximize the performance on their platform. And I wonder if I wonder if that's going to change over the next 12 to 18 months in any meaningful way. You also got to look at EVGA's RTX 2080 Super FTW3. I almost said something else.
it's the one with the liquid cooler. You can kind of see it behind me. I have the liquid cooler propped up on this headphone stand right now. But, it's an interesting card because they're completely overbuilt, outrageous FTW PCB. So it's not a stock card at all. It's over an inch taller PCB with their own, VRMs and stuff. And it's made for overclocking. The problem is we talked about the clock speeds at the top, and they were already pushing 105 megahertz faster than RTX 2080 with the 2080 Super. So how much room is there left to go? And even this overbuilt card with an all-in-one liquid cooler on the core and a blower cooler for the VRMs and the memory is still only clocked 30 megahertz faster out of the box. So I ran the OC scanner tool and had pumped up the power limit. The power limit on this card is huge. It's 130%. Yo. So ran OC scanner and still only got a plus 41 score. The second time I ran it, I got closer to 44. But I was thinking that was a plus 45 anyway, because Turing moves in 15 megahertz increments. So it's 15, 30, 45. And plus 45 is, you have to add that to the 30 megahertz out of the box. Now we're talking about, 75 megahertz overclock, which is pretty good. I, of course, pushed it as far as I could. I got plus 90 megahertz on the core stable in all the games I was running. And that's a total of 120 megahertz overclocked out of the box. But GPU boost 4.0, it does its own thing. It's looking at power. It's looking at thermals. And it's adjusting the boost speed accordingly. And even though I had the clock set, I think the boost clock was set to something like 1950. After my overclock was over, it was actually running closer to 2.1 gigahertz. It was like 2100 megahertz that would eventually dip down to like 2085 after a while. But this card did a really good job of sustaining those boost frequencies. However, even with clock speeds of over 2 gigahertz, getting everything I could possibly get out of TU-104 with this beefier, you know, better cooled card, still the benchmark results are even more underwhelming than they were with the actual super review. We're talking 1 to 3% faster. Overclocked. So
$100 extra, a little bit less than that if you buy it with the current rebate. Very stylish, very liquid cooled, no meaningful performance improvement over a stock card in a proper air-cooled case.
Yeah, the only reason I would recommend a card like this is if you were looking at a 2080 Super and you're mm-hmm. in a thermally constrained kind of environment, and I'll be looking at a case soon. It's the LDO3 from Silverstone, which is compact. It's all glass all around it. In those really small glass cases where you don't have a lot of front intake, you're going right. to be choking out a lot of graphics cards, and they don't personally recommend even going up past like a 2070 necessarily with that card. It depends on the style. They're like, please use a blower cooler. Well, with something like this, you can use whatever GPU you want, because as long as you've got 120 millimeter fan mount, then you're probably actually keeping the GPU cool enough under load. But that's pretty much it. Like, you need to have a special use case to require this kind of cooling, because I think they're getting pretty much everything they can get out of this GPU. So some of these hefty, like, out-of-the-box overclock cards you're going to see, like, you're going to be paying a premium for a card that might have a 75 megahertz overclock tops out of the box. And, you know, I think the ones I've seen so far listed, the highest one I saw was maybe 60 megahertz mm-hmm. overclock, like a 1885 megahertz out of the box. So it's not much, and you'd be paying a lot more for 1 to 2%, maybe 3% faster performance. So long story short, they've squeezed as much as they can out of TU-104, and you don't really need anything faster than the Founders Edition card, which is the same price as any of the stock cards you're going to see out there at $699.
So okay. Well,
it's a lot less exciting than 2060 and 2070 Super were.
I can't really argue. Also of mixed excitement, quote, Samsung says it has fixed the Galaxy Fold and will release it in September. Dieter Bond's got a big write-up at The Verge. Essentially, that they've apparently fixed the folding screen. They announced that today. They've made improvements.
Mm.
And if you go to the fantastic Samsung newsroom, at Samsung, we've always focused on pioneering the next generation of mobile innovation, new products and technologies that push the entire industry forward. And yeah, I can't even. It's just.
Yeah,
it's so drawn out even for a press release. You know, they actually list what they've done. The top protective layer of the Infinity Flex display has been extended beyond the bezel, making it apparent that it is an integral part of the display structure and not meant to be removed, i.e. don't peel off the screen. Additional reinforcements to better protect the device from external particles while maintaining its signature foldable experience, i.e. they put a gasket on it. Quote, the top and bottom of the hinge area have been strengthened with newly added protection caps. Oh, that's the gasket part. Additional metal layers underneath the Infinity Flex display have been included to reinforce the protection of the display. The space between the hinge and body of the Galaxy Fold has been reduced. So there's still a possibility, but there's less of a possibility. I'm very curious to see how this goes. Because on one hand, you know, Samsung reimagines the smartphone, changing the way you interact, communicate, and experience everyday life. Precisely refined, slender, and encased in luxurious finished materials. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, it's slender until you fold it in half. And then yeah, it's one chunkier phone you might carry.
Yeah. So the response to that is that T-Mobile flat out told Dieter Bond, quote, T-Mobile will not carry the Galaxy Fold because we already offer customers a wide range of the latest smartphones. Please reach out to Samsung for any further inquiries. Now, if you buy one of these, it will work, right? But T-Mobile says they won't sell the Galaxy Fold when it's re-released. And, you know, if you remember way back earlier this year, when T-Mobile, we're talking about T-Mobile and AT&T being the two carriers, we haven't heard anything from AT&T at this point. So, you know, T-Mobile's backed away. AT&T has not backed away yet. And of course, I can also totally see AT&T playing hardball, being like, we had to cancel all those orders, you know, reduce your end so we can make more margin on it. T-Mobile's like, yeah, we're not going to do it. It should run on any network if you buy one outright. That's not really an issue.
Right.
But if you want to buy it from a carrier, the list has gone from two to one.
For now.
It'll be curious.
It will soon be none. Don't worry. But unless they're going to exclude it from their device protection plans, because let's be honest, say even if they pumped up the price, like, okay, normally it's, you know, whatever, $10, $15 a month. I don't know what device protection costs. Sorry. But what if with this phone, it's like, but it's $50 a month for this phone. Well, it's still going to break within the first month. So then they're only getting $50 from you to replace a $1,980 phone. So that's me being very cynical, but these are very fragile, even with any improvements they may have made. The first time you sit on this thing when it's unfolded, the first time your kid grabs it, the first time it gets dropped on its corner, even from like 2 feet, it's probably going to break. They are selling people on this concept of this new phone paradigm that nobody asked for. At this point, we would like maybe some kind of clever underscreen front-facing camera, because we've seen some kind of ridiculous pop-out fold-around camera concepts to get away from the notch, get away from a hole. I think people just really want their phone to be reliable and to run the apps that they want to run. Once you're into a phone ecosystem, what does it really matter what it looks
like?
With
a larger battery?
Yeah. And if you're okay with a thicker phone, and this is literally the thickness of two phones when you fold it, if you're okay with a thicker phone, and God forbid with a removable battery, you could and an SD card slot. I mean, think of what you could do if you took a modern smartphone, and this is in a case, it's still pretty thin, and you put a thicker battery on it, and you put a memory card slot in it, and
all sorts of useful things that end users have asked for, or at least, you know, people like us have asked for. No, I'm not arguing. It's interesting. Look, because Galaxy Fold's coming out. The pre-launch, and there's been some interesting articles about this, how, all these, how large tech companies have developed relationships with journalists to seed information out. And I'm certainly going to be helping to reward them for that, because sources have told 9to5 Mac that Apple's going to release three iPhone 11 models this fall with an A13 chip, a lightning port, and a new Taptic engine. 3D touch is going away. And, this is not exactly rocket surgery to think about, but hey, look at the size of that mess on the back of the phone.
Isn't it glorious?
This I don't even know what to, this is an early, either this is either testing the waters or an early acknowledgement that they're going to keep the lightning port instead of moving to USB-C. But essentially, they're going to have, three models for the XS, the XS Max, and the XR will be replaced. 3X OLED Retina display and the 2X Liquid Retina display on the less expensive N104. It's a good read. Guillerme Rambo put together a 9to5 Mac. I'm also really curious what the Taptic engine is going to be about, because the code name for it is Leap Haptics, and nobody knows what it's going to do other than, do something that makes it easy to move off of 3D touch. Of course, there will be awesome camera action. The front-facing camera is going to include 120 frames per second, they're saying. There's going to be a wide angle, mini mock-up. Sources share that it looks very similar to the mini mock-ups that have been circling around, where it has three cameras on the back in that square. It's going to include a wide-angle image, or a camera capable of a wide-angle image. In any case, they're expected to have their usual September event where they announce new phones. The other thing that came out on the rumor side was out of Bloomberg. Debbie Wu-Yan Gao and Mark Gurman are basically saying that, it's interesting, right? Because we think of Apple as being this place where they have a license to print money and they make all the bazillions of phones, even though they don't, they make a fraction of the total Android output. But that they make a huge amount of phones, a huge amount of money, and it was always growing. And then iPhone sales kind of flatlined and started decreasing for a while. But this is the, according to people familiar with the matter, Apple suppliers are preparing to produce components for up to 75 million new iPhones in 2019 second half, i.e. the holiday shopping season, basically the same amount as last year. That's probably a strong sign that Apple needs some help on their stock price. apparently Foxconn is increasing their hiring in Shenzhen. They're offering staff like a 10% additional, or they're basically paying their staff more to make sure they actually have the people to build the phones. It's really interesting to watch the sort of rumors and jostling around this. In part because I also saw a great article that came out of the Wall Street Journal. The hottest phones for the next billion users aren't smartphones is the title of this. And of course, as soon as I opened it up again, it disappeared behind a paywall. But that this huge number of consumers, this next generation of smartphone consumers, are coming online with phones that really look incredibly old school, because in a lot of ways they are. KaiOS operating system, that phone you're looking at there, right? Something like that's going to be costing about $25. And yes, as Newly Purnell points out in the article, the gadgets look like the inexpensive Nokia Corp phones that were big about two decades ago. I don't remember them being that inexpensive two decades ago, but compared to, $1,200 in today's dollars for a phone, I guess that does look pretty cheap. But they call them smart feature phone. They have some basic apps. They have internet access. And that this is where the growth is going, right? 3.4 billion people around the world remain cut off from the internet, Newly writes. And this is where kind of the next round of people coming online are going to be, or going to be coming from. I am fascinated. I'm really curious. I'm really curious to see what the apps end up being like and what they have access to on that. So, but, think about that in a world where we're like, the least you can spend for a decent phone is like $300, $250. But boy, you'd really wish you had that $1,000 phone. There's going to be a billion people coming online with phones that are basically the equivalent of, an inexpensive dinner for two people, breakfast. It's less expensive than like what it cost to buy breakfast for my son and I, my 7-year-old and I around here. So something to think about. Other rumors, Apple might be buying Intel smartphone modem chip business for $1 billion.
Hey, breaking news as of about 13 or 14 minutes ago. Paul Thurrott on Twitter is reporting that they have purchased them for $1 billion.
Well, that was fast.
Yeah. The rumors were apparently true.
Well, there you have it.
Apple acquires Intel smartphone modem business for $1 billion. That was about 15 minutes ago.
Given that they were the only customer, I'm not entirely surprised. Well,
it's so strange to me. Like, I wonder what really was going on, because if you followed this story all along,
right,
it was delightfully dramatic, and all sorts of Apple v. Samsung kind of intrigue had been going on with the Qualcomm case, and then all of a sudden, Apple settles with Qualcomm, and then Intel drops its 5G business. So you're like, maybe Intel never really had a 5G product. If they're like, you're going with Qualcomm now? Yeah, we're out of the game. We're going to stop pouring money into this failing venture of ours. But then maybe that wasn't true. Like, if you read Semi-Accurate, you kind of got the feeling that they never really had a functioning 5G chip.
Right.
They have patents. They have a team. They've been working on it for a long time. But they had an underperforming 4G part that apparently caused Apple to have to clock down the Qualcomm part so that they matched when they were dual sourcing. And then they had a 5G part that may or may not have existed in a functional, ready to go form. which kind of forced Apple's hand, you think. But it was not like Apple was up against a release for a new phone. That already would have been baked in. Like, whatever they were going to use with the XS, they were going to use. It hasn't been that long since this Qualcomm settlement was made. And now all of a sudden, here they are buying Intel's 5G business. So maybe Intel was onto something. Maybe they did have a working product. I don't know.
Yeah. It's thin. You know, the other thing, it's thin, but I'm utterly delighted by another Verge story, Andrew Liptak. Pixel 4 screen leak shows off large forehead bezel. In case you're wondering what a forehead bezel is on the phone, it basically means that there is a bezel at the top of the phone, which, if you ask me, if you take a look at the pictures, the rumor pictures, the leaked images, it is essentially a bezel at the top of the phone. So I am down with that.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, more room for battery. So those images came from Ice Universe via 9to5 Google. Probably should have dug back to the Ice Universe tweet. I apologize to at Universec, Universelc. Boy, that's a hard Twitter name to say. But yeah, I also like the quote on the tweet that showed that leak. Let me see if I can get it in there so Burke can shine that out to the audience. But if you look at Ice Universe, the oval opening of the Pixel 4 series front panel means that the Google Pixel 4 series will be groundbreaking and new and worth looking forward to. I also hope it's thick, damn it. Thick with a giant battery. He is very excited, or she is very excited about that oval. I'm just very excited about not having that damn notch in the screen, which I know lots of people weren't bothered by, but it drove me nuts. Maybe I'd have, if I'd bought one, maybe I'd have gotten used to it. It would seem so normal, so reasonable. Hey, we truly appreciate you listening to This Week in Computer Hardware. Twitch is something we do for you each and every week. And having you here, having you listening is important to us because, you know, quite frankly, I'm sure Burke or Kevin would rather be doing anything other than editing us and dealing with the inanities of us communicating hardware tidbits. So that's why, you know, we do it for you. Otherwise, it would be much less painful for us to just have a phone call between ourselves. Seriously, though, every day it takes a team of hosts, producers, editors, engineers, and support staff to get the content to you. That's a big deal. Twitch podcasts are free. They're ad-supported. The easiest thing you can do to help the network is to subscribe to this show and all your favorite twit.tv podcasts. Subscribing means you'll get each new episode the moment it publishes. You don't have to go to the website. You don't have to wait around. Boom. As soon as it goes, it starts downloading to your favorite podcatcher. It's so easy. Thanks for listening, and remember to subscribe on your favorite podcatcher or visit twit.tv/subscribe for more details. And seriously, thank you, each and every one of you. We do, for listening to the podcast. And if you haven't subscribed, do us a favor. Subscribe. twit.tv/subscribe for more details, or just search on your favorite podcatcher, podcast delivery application for Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh my goodness. 3600 is getting a lot of love this week. I believe, love the 3600, but not as much as Legit Reviews does.
Yeah. Nate over there, he was just like, you know, it's the $250 version, so it's the X. Right. The 3600 is $199. The 3600X is $249. I thought it was interesting just to look through his gaming benchmarks, especially because you know that if you have fewer cores and threads, you're not going to get the same performance if you're doing encoding or any kind of rendering work, that sort of thing. Some of the benchmarks that we like to run. But what about gaming? And it's really not that far behind a 3700X, and you're saving it's like $80, I think. $329 versus $249. Right. So it's debatable whether the 3600X is really worth it over the 3600. I would like to see some more reviews of that. I don't know if AMD has been sending out 3600s. I just got my 3600X in the last week or so, which I have yet to get to here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the initial kits that went out, I think, were all 3900X and 3700X. Some outlets went out and bought their own 3600s because that's been one of the available CPUs, I think, since launch. I don't think I've seen the 3600 out of stock at $199. But either that or the X is usually available. But that's about it. It's rare to see a 3700X available.
Right.
Last night it was. I know we were doing our podcast last night. It was right there on Amazon. Ships and sold by Amazon. Yeah. $329 for the 3700X. But
yep, that's available. The Ryzen 5 3600 6 core 12 thread, that's available at $200. The 3600X is available. And actually, the 3700X is available right now. I could have one tomorrow if I hit that button right now. Can I come sleep on your couch?
I am fine with you making that purchase. I authorize it. And I bear no responsibility for that choice whatsoever.
Could you read your credit card or just email me your credit card number? We'll take care of this right now.
Okay. I couldn't quite catch that. I think Skype is glitching out. You said something about your credit card. I'm sure your credit card's fine, Patrick. Just use it.
Yeah. I'll edit and save this clip for you, Patrick, and that should work.
He authorized it. Honey, look, I have him on video authorizing it.
I had to.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's talk about the 3600X. You know, it's considerably less expensive. It's 100 and I should say, well, the 3600 is $130 less. It is not quite as inexpensive. 3700X, $330. The 3600 is $200. The 3600X is $80 less than the 3700X. How much, I mean, what are you giving up performance-wise on that? I mean, obviously, you're giving up a couple of cores. You're giving up four threads, two cores, a little bit of clock speed. No, actually, I guess I take that back. 3600X is running at the same clock speed. Overclocked 4.4, or the boost. The base is a couple, like, you know, 200 hertz slower, which is practically within the area of marginal insignificance. I'm wondering, though, like, for multi-threaded stuff, that's a lot of cores to give up. I mean, what do their numbers look like? What were they feeling? Let's use feeling words in the group.
I don't think there's any, like, if I look at like Blender, you look at like the BMW benchmark, of course, it's going to be slower. The score, like the 3700, it only took 230.8 seconds versus 302.5 with the 3600X. So we're talking 3700X versus 3600X. It's pretty significant. I mean, if you're talking about multi-threaded workloads, you're seeing a big drop if you go with the 3600X instead. If you're thinking 3600X already at $250, I think it would be a very wise choice to just go the extra $70 or so, $80, and get that 8-core, 16-thread, 65-watt part instead. I personally, after looking through this review and kind of what I already thought based on the numbers, because the 3600X is a 95-watt part, it makes the 3700X look that much better because the 3700X has the same boost clock, only 65 watts, and it has all eight of those cores enabled on that chiplet. That's a single chiplet design. So, you know, it's just higher binning. Like, it's a better product, you know, that I'm kind of surprised that it's available right now, but I don't really know what they're doing as far as how they're deciding when these through the binning process, when the chiplets come out and all eight cores are usable and can run at whatever speed they need for one of these CPUs, when do they make the choice that, okay, we'll make that into a 3700X, or we'll save it, get another one, and those two go into a 3900X. There are not very many 3900Xs out there. And the few that we keep seeing are at inflated prices, or somebody saw that the price skyrocketed and they're selling a used one that they've only had for a couple of weeks and probably planning on just getting another one later when they come back into stock. Like, I'd be very tempted if I bought one out of pocket for $500 and I saw I could sell my used one for $700 right now. Like,
it would be tempting.
I'll downgrade for a while and pocket $200 and buy it again later. But, you know, they've did a good job of kind of hitting the different price points, but the 3600 seems like a fantastic deal at $199 buys you into this new Zen 2 platform. And then the 3700X and the 3900X are compelling too for their own reasons. Everything else is just kind of filling price points.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you're looking at, because I obsess over handbrake rendering times because, you know, I'm rendering video, I'm stressed, I want it to move faster. And that was, for me, the big deal about originally moving to the 1800X, because it made this huge increase in performance. And you look at the 3900X and the legit reviews benchmarks, and, you know, you get like a, I should probably do the math on this one. You know, you go from like 23 to almost 30 frames per second. Going from the 3600X to the 3700X. And that was about to say, the 3900X is 30% faster than the 3700X and almost twice as fast as the 3600X. The 3900X is, you know, again, right around 28, 29, 30% faster on video rendering than the Core i9-9900K. Things change a bit when you go to gaming, and having all those cores is not nearly as important when you go to gaming. But, you know, depending on the kind of workloads you're doing, it's kind of crazy. It's also fun to do. They have a whole section of 1080p game performance with Twitch streaming. And it's interesting to look at that, because that's when you start to see some real advantages on, you know, the Intel parts, where it's like Twitch streaming with OBS, which is a pretty heavy load. You know, Far Cry 5, 1080p, ultra quality, 1080p 60 and X264 stream. And you're looking at, it's the 3700X and the 3900X are basically sitting at, 126 frames, 125 frames for the 3900X, 126 frames for the 3700X not streaming. And then it drops to 180 frames when it's streaming and 102 frames when it's streaming for the 3700X, which is not a huge amount, right? Even the 3600X is almost as fast as the 3700X running a 1080p gaming, because at 1080p, I don't think your GPU is the benchmark on Far Cry, or the bottleneck on Far Cry 5. But you take a look at the frames on the Core i9-9900K, you're looking at 152 frames per second when it's not streaming, 129 frames per second when it's streaming, and that's a pretty hefty bump. You know, still an advantage there. You know, less of an advantage when you look at something like Rainbow Six, but still, you know, Intel's definitely ahead on that. I also, you know, I don't know how many of you actually, you know, stream to Twitch while gaming, but you know, even if you don't, like looking at the Far Cry 5 numbers, again, you know, the 3900X, a couple frames per second slower than the 3700X, and almost 30 frames, 30 plus frames per second slower than the Core i9-9900K. So it's interesting to look at. None of those frame rates will help me not get fragged in any game I play online. I mostly need to, you know, avoid communicating with my family and spend more time gaming to produce those numbers.
as we should all.
As should we all. So say we all. There's an interesting Reddit post which turned out to a gamer turned into a Gamers Nexus article, which basically comes down to, don't turn the voltage down too far on a Ryzen 3000 unless you like slow. But what inspired it was a Reddit post about a week ago, maybe about a week and a half ago now. So a YouTuber said they were lowering temperatures and getting boosted performance on Ryzen 3000 CPUs. And they were basically lowering the B core values in the BIOS. as you get lower, things kind of fall apart. But it's an interesting, I love it when people see rumors and kind of go nuts on testing them out. But yeah, the new PSA at the top of that one, undervolting does not retain performance with lower temps. Clocks remain the same, but performance deteriorates significantly. TLDR, straight up, undervolting does not retain performance with lower temperatures. Performance drops significantly. It's interesting, you know, and of course it turns into this gigantic, you know, 255 odd comment story. Patrick Lathan's got a nice write up on Gamers Nexus, and it's amazing. If you drop the voltage considerably, guess what? The performance drops down a lot.
Also considerably. Yeah, it's linear that way. It's almost like AMD engineers kind of knew how much voltage it needed to perform at the rated specifications. And there's always a window. There's always like a, they're being generous with voltage because then you, it's easier to bin these parts out and actually ship these products. But yeah, you might have a magical chip that you stumbled upon that can run like 1.1 volts and still be full speed, maybe.
Right.
But it doesn't surprise me at all to hear that somebody making potentially spurious claims ended up being wrong, and other people testing their own chips. It's not all these chips. Maybe you have the magic CPU that runs at 1 volt, but
what was funny is, right?
Yeah.
The performance, like, and again, I totally know what you mean by, like, you know, chips are weird. Some chips come off the line and perform better than others. So you can literally have a magic chip that performs better than other people's. But when they went from the 3600 to the 3900X, when they did like a, they dropped it like a hat, like 0.05 volts offset for the 3900X, and the performance on Cinebench, like, went up like 150, 160 frames per second. The score went up 150 points, not frames, pardon me. That would be awesome if you went from, you know, up 150 frames per second on anything. But if you undervolt it too much, the performance drops through the ceiling. Here we go. With an offset as low as 0.1 volt using the 3900X, gained 2% over the stock multi-threaded score. So, careful. Hey,
it works.
Careful what you do with what you read on Reddit. That's all I'm saying. So, that just amused me to no end. I also got to say, Nintendo, you look at a certain Butterfly keyboard. It's been really frustrating for anybody who's owned a MacBook with a Butterfly keyboard and has issues because it was denied. And then finally they made some changes. And then finally they started fixing everything over at Apple. The Nintendo Switch has not been around for a long time. And this is not an open announcement. The write-up by Patrick Klepek up on Vice basically was that they found an internal Nintendo memo which instructs customer service to fix Joy-Con drift for free. So Joy-Con drift, if you're not familiar with the problem some people are having on the Switch, is that those detachable controllers, the Joy-Cons start moving things around on the screen all by them lonesomes. And there was a report by Kotaku. There was a huge response to that. And Nintendo basically said, we're not going to charge customers for Joy-Con repairs, and they're going to refund anybody who paid to have their Joy-Cons repaired. Here it is. Quote, customers will no longer be requested to provide proof of purchase for Joy-Con repairs. Additionally, it is not necessarily to confirm warranty status. If a customer requests a refund for a previously paid Joy-Con repair, confirm the prior repair and then issue a refund. This was by a source familiar with Nintendo's updated customer support documentation. That's who told Vice Games, right, Mr. Klepek? And I'm delighted. This is like customer service. Apple, take notes. Take action earlier. I'm pointing to this story on the screen. And they're saying Joy-Con drift exists. We take responsibility for it. We want our customers to have a great experience. Let's look up Nintendo Switch, and let's go to Amazon. There's Nintendo Switch is a $300 product, and MacBook Pro. Oh, and the MacBook Pro started. Oh, let's just randomly pick one off of here. Oh, here's a 13-inch MacBook Pro for $1,300. Guess which one got a better response for customer service faster? Yeah.
You know, Apple has a history of not acknowledging issues and just leaving it up to the genius bar one-on-one. Right. Here's the actual script. Here's what you're supposed to say. Here's what you're supposed to do. And not really releasing it publicly unless they absolutely have to. And Nintendo has a history going back to their big start here in the U.S. with the Nintendo Entertainment System, I think. Could be wrong about this, but I think in Nintendo's history, at least once they have voluntarily either recalled and re-released product or instituted some form of repair.
Right.
It's just a different company culture. Nintendo was extremely concerned about their integrity, or their, at least their appearance of integrity. They seem to be a company that thinks that they have to do things the right way. And Apple seems to be the kind of company who, if anybody watching or listening has any sort of disdain for Apple, if they're not an Apple fan, they probably think of Apple's products as being overpriced, and there's all the horror stories about service issues, and we had the ball gate thing back in the day with all the MacBook right. Pros, and that's why they no longer speak to NVIDIA, and all sorts of repair problems, and the latest on top of everything else being their flawed keyboard design, where this race to get to the thinnest possible form factor produced this extremely fragile keyboard technology, which doesn't stand up to repeated use, where you end up with stuck keys or just non-responsive keys. So, you know, they don't stand out as that reliable company anymore. They just look like an expensive lifestyle brand at this point, and which is sad because Apple has unbelievable engineering talent and the best right. R&D probably in the world. And incredible amounts of time and effort have been put into, and money have been put into, creating the computer controlled process that actually produces something like their aluminum shell that their MacBook Pro goes into. It's phenomenal. Right. If you do, you know, if you read about it, sending people over to China for weeks or months at a time to like fine tune the process exactly. It's not just that they outsource. They only outsource if they're 100% convinced that the engineering team is producing the exact quality that they would in-house in Cupertino. And you are going to pay a premium when there's that much money being spent on R&D and quality control.
Right.
But then some flawed designs have left the building over the years, and they're always reticent to acknowledge this because it would tarnish the brand. Like, it's like a luxury brand. So, you know, it is nice to see Nintendo do this. You did mention something about a class action, and it seems like companies always have to be forced a bit, but at least they're
right.
being well, contrite I mean, about it now.
One of the things he points out in the article is they never actually openly admit there's no there's no open acknowledgement, in part because, you know, that's like standard, you know, PR 101. Here's the line. Quote, nowhere in the document does Nintendo acknowledge there is a fault with Joy-Cons, only saying that they are aware of, quote, recent reports, unquote. And because of the huge attention it's received, the company was anticipating more people would be asking Nintendo questions. We want to quickly handle these questions to restore consumer smiles, the documentation reads, end quote. If there's a possible lawsuit, they're not really openly acknowledging anything. They're just openly making a policy to make it right. So, and you know, it's a start.
I found my historical reference, searching the internet database at Wikipedia.
Right.
Back before the NES in America, when they finally convinced toy sellers to sell this by branding it as an entertainment system and putting a little robot in the box because American retailers wanted nothing to do with video games after the crash, the Famicom was selling well in Japan. And then quoting the article here, many Famicom units reportedly froze during gameplay after tracing the problem to a faulty circuit. Nintendo recalled all Famicom systems just before the holiday shopping season and temporarily suspended production of the system while the concerns were addressed, costing them millions of dollars. So they reissued it with a new motherboard,
right.
problem solved, but they lost those holiday sales because they said, you know what? It's a faulty product. We don't want to sell products. They're going to end up freezing on people. We're going to recall all of them, eat the money, re-release a better version. So just going all the way back to 1983, this is how they've run their business. And they're very proud of the way they run their business. And they have very high standards. So it would be nice to see Apple, which, you know, 1983, 1984, somewhere in there, they were kind of releasing some relatively important products back then with the Macintosh. And they've had quality control issues. They had quality control problems big time with the Apple III, a much maligned system, and for good reason, because it overheated and the chips literally were coming loose out of their sockets on the circuit board. So
that's not really problematic.
Not really. No, the old instructions were lift it up and drop it back onto your desk to receive the chips.
Always a soothing thing to hear when you're talking about an incredibly expensive and one would think sensitive piece of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Just laying that out there. Oh, my goodness. I was laughing. Tile has raised another $45 million. This is up on TechCrunch. I know two people that where the Tile, the little tracking devices, you put them on your keys, your cat, your bag, whatever it is. I was just kind of blown away that, like, what on earth, you know, how many people are buying these things that they got another $45 million in investment? But this is their Series C funding. But apparently they are blowing up in Europe. Like 160% growth there. They apparently had a huge Prime Day on Amazon. So I was just kind of fascinated by the idea that there are still a ton of people buying these. I will say that the latest generation of the Tiles are much more attractive and look much sturdier than the early rounds of Tiles, but that amused me to no end. We'll see.
Are you not someone who frequently cannot find your keys anywhere?
I usually
kind of know where your stuff is, but
I'm very anal retentive about the location of my keys, my phone, and my wedding ring. And as a result, I pretty much, knock on wood, never lose those, except when I do. There was a case where the cat actually was using my wedding ring.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
it was the
ball.
Cat.
No. As somebody who has gotten, welding spatter on his wedding ring, which led to one of my favorite conversations with my wife. Honey, what's that? Oh, it's welding spatter. She didn't know whether to be more angry that I wasn't wearing gloves or that there were like gobs of, MIG welding cruft on the surface of my titanium wedding ring. I did lose it once for about a day and a half because my hands are large and they swell a lot at night. So I take my wedding ring off when I sleep. But it was hysterical because the cat actually knocked it off of the dresser. And, I do that because apparently it was whacking it around so hard in the bedroom. It woke my wife up and I couldn't find my wedding ring. My wife's like, oh, that's what the cat was beating around last night. We eventually found it like stuffed under the bed, under a bag there. But I know people who use them constantly and love them, but it was, $45 million just seems like a lot of money.
I used to lock myself out of my house so frequently because I would forget my keys as I left and I would just pull the door closed behind me and it was locked. And so then I couldn't get back in. And I think I broke in through the same window so many times, which ended up just being boarded over because I broke it badly enough. I couldn't fix it again. And I was like climbing in through basement windows and stuff. This is my house. I think about the seventh time in a row this happened, I went straight to the hardware store and bought one of those like keypad locks like you'll see on a commercial door.
Yeah.
And that day, just once I broke in for the last time, got the front door, took the handle off, put this keypad thing on. So for someone like me who went out and spent like $125 on a keypad lock because I kept locking myself out of my own house and I was walking the dogs, it was most of the time, it would be like, oh, take the dogs outside. I'm stuck. And I've got to now get them over the fence, get myself over the fence, and then break in through a window somewhere and hope the police don't get called because I don't have an ID on me.
Right.
So, yeah, I would. Yeah. So I would hope that if these things are cheap enough, I don't know how much an individual tile costs, but
about 25
if it's like screaming at me like you're leaving your keys behind, I don't know what the range is, but I will say my number one favorite feature of an Apple Watch, and I'm wearing one right here. As much as I criticize Apple, I have an Apple phone and an Apple Watch, and my wife is like Apple only, and partly pressure from her because we have a child and she wants to be able to iMessage me even if I don't have service if I'm on an airplane or something. But be that as it may, there's a feature on the Apple Watch where you can ping your phone.
Yeah.
And wherever your phone is in the house, whether it's turned to silent or not,
it starts singing.
Dinging at you, and you're like, oh, it's under the couch cushion. That's where I couldn't find it. So,
just much less embarrassing than sending your wife an email asking her to call your phone so you can find it. So, the tile, the basic range of the tile is like 30 meters for the Slim, 45 meters for the Mate, 90 meters for the Pro. That's, of course, is going to vary depending on what your house is made of, if you're inside or outside of the house, what's in between you and the device. But what happens with the tile, though, is you have the app and you can check the last known. If you can't actually hit it via Bluetooth, you can check the app to see where its last known location was, which hopefully doesn't turn out to be, say, Chicago, if you changed planes on your way back home. A friend of mine did that. Oh, my bag is in Detroit, I think it was for him. Which is awkward but painful. Four packs are like, I think it's like four for $100, depending on which model you get. Pro pack is $35 for one, $60 for two, and the Slim is $30. I would recommend, me personally, I would recommend getting one of the larger models, the Mate or the Pro, because you can replace the batteries on those yourself. You know, if you have one of the tiny Slim ones, at the end of the year, the battery's supposed to last a year, then they'll give you a discount on a new purchase on one. So,
oh, great. So they're disposable. All right.
No, not all of them. Some of them.
It's the cheap ones are. Which I guess kind of makes sense. But hey, you're going to lose it anyway. If you're the kind of person who loses your keys, you're going to lose your tile. So
that's the whole point of the tile, is to not lose your keys. Oh my goodness. It is a nice app. It is a cool application of Bluetooth as far as I'm concerned. Just want to say that. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to This Week in Computer Hardware. This Week in Computer Hardware. We call it Twitch. You can find it at twit.tv/Twitch, including all the information you need to learn how to subscribe and see all of our episodes. Or you can just sit there on the webpage, twit.tv/Twitch, and play episode after episode until you are sick and tired of Sebastian and myself. Hopefully that never happens.
It may happen.
Well, it may happen.
Just go back and forth. If you get sick of me, just listen to him and mute me or something. I don't know how you do that, but yeah.
That's an interesting question. In any case, if you got a question, do us a favor, tweet at Sebastian Peake or at Patrick Norton on the Twitters. You can also email us twitch@twit.tv, and we should get that email. If you have a hardware question, we'd love to hear about it. And hopefully you have a fast, delightful machine that makes you happy. And if you don't, ask us a question and we'll help you make it faster, help you fix it, help you figure out what your next GPU is going to be. And if you have any questions or if there's an area of hardware you want us to cover more, let us know. If you want more Sebastian, sure. And who doesn't want some more Sebastian in their diet? Go to PCPer.com. He's the editor-in-chief of PCPer.com, and you will find he writes a lot of aardvarks. No articles on aardvarks.
Aardvarks and cardware.
Cardware. Now, there's a podcast I can get behind, or the name of a bar, possibly in Arizona. Apparently, today has been hard for speaking. PCPer.com is the place to go for more Sebastian Peake. You can catch up with me here at Twitch, twit.tv/Twitch, or head over to avxl.com. And thank each and every one of you for listening. Sebastian and I will. Yeah, and suddenly I'm speaking like Yoda. I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Sebastian Peake.
We'll catch you next week on Twitch.